NeoZaz.com Entertainment Network. With over 1.5 million downloads of our podcast series, NeoZaz.com is a home of Star Wars in Character, The Greaties, The Great 80s Movie Debate, Muppets in Character, Trailer Pod Boys, Indiana Jones in Character, Dial-Up Movies, Attraction Obsession, Pass the Popcorn, and more, with even more to come. NeoZaz.com is also home of the YouTube series, Chris's Micro Movie Reviews, and the new video series, We're Bored, the Vintage Oddball Board Game Show. Visit NeoZaz.com today to catch up on all our great series and original entertainment, and keep an eye out for all the great new additions coming soon.
I waited for you for 50 fucking years, you twat, and now you're going to bang my granddaughter? This is awful.
Hello and welcome to Dial-Up Movies, the podcast devoted to preserving the memory of your favorite films from the 90s. Whether good or bad, we're going to see how those films hold up. On today's show, we'll be discussing Hook from 1991, directed by Steven Spielberg and starring Robin Williams, Dustin Hoffman, Julia Roberts, and Bob Hoskins. My name is Lou, and joining me are my two co-hosts, Steven...
Peter Banning.
And Tim.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
So, this is one of those movies that I always knew that I liked, well, always said that I liked, and hadn't seen it in a really long time.
The revisionist history has begun.
Interesting.
And it's not that I didn't like it. I did. I liked it a lot, but there were parts that I remembered liking that I kind of didn't like and hated now.
Oh, yeah.
And there are definitely... noticed more about the acting. I think we're going to talk a lot about the acting and the performances, like Dustin Hoffman.
Who's amazing in this movie.
Right off the bat, I just wanted to say, did you guys look into the reviews on this movie at all?
I didn't look too hard.
I didn't look too hard either.
I briefly glanced over the IMDb trivia for this and found out some interesting things that I didn't know, but did not look into anything beyond that.
So... I mean, it's probably all the same stuff what we had. Long story short, this is a solid 30% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Jesus!
70, that's critics. 76 with audience. So it's critics tore this movie apart. They hated this movie. And even Spielberg
he wasn't thrilled with the final product.
He went double over time and double over budget for this movie.
Really expensive.
He also, there was a quote from 2011 maybe, that he admitted that while working on this film, it made him briefly rethink having any more children.
That's awesome.
Because working with kids, it can be difficult, and working with 50 kids, maybe 10 of whom are stars, you could say.
Yeah.
It was professionals.
The girl who plays Peter Banning's daughter, Maggie, fucking sucked. I hated every scene that she was in, essentially. The musical number.
Oh, yeah, I had forgotten about the musical.
Oh, man.
Well, that's another interesting piece of trivia. This was originally written as a stage play, a musical kind of thing.
With Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
In 1983, apparently Spielberg wanted to do this stage... I don't know if it was going to be a play, right? It was going to be a movie?
It was going to be a musical. It was originally going to be a musical. Okay. Well, I guess they were going to do a film version of it, but it was mainly going to be a musical.
With Michael Jackson, but it was 1983, and he was at the time working on Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and that's why he scrapped it and picked it up 8 years later.
Mm-hmm. But by then, you couldn't really have Michael Jackson in anything, especially with all those kids around, because that was... I'm not even kidding. That was actually when it was all hitting. All those accusations were flying.
Yeah.
Which is why Michael Jackson's name is nowhere to be found on this thing.
Mm-hmm. Also, apparently they originally wanted David Bowie for Hook.
Turn back, Peter!
See, I can see that. I could totally see that working.
Oh, I could see that working with the costuming. Yeah.
That would be great.
Like a pirate version of...
Jareth from The Labyrinth.
Oh, I was just thinking weird Pirate Z Stardust, you know,
as far as what Spielberg was saying, he this part, it kind of bugged me out because he said that he hated working with the large sets. Mm. And he says, I think that was what he said in 2011, that if he had done it now, he just would have done CGI the entire background. But I like the sets. Yeah, Did you guys like the sets?
Oh, yeah. The sets are great.
I think it just, the problem was, like, there were scenes where they were kind of, there was a shot just going over, like, the pirate city or docks. And there's, like, scenes of, like, Peter flying with pirates. And, like, that was just a huge set. And, like, just the scope of that, like, must have been, like, super difficult to do.
Oh, so. Yeah. And it must have been expensive as hell to build. You know, like...
Yeah, but I think it all works out, because even today, the special effects don't look that terrible for 1991.
No, I even like the flying, even though it's very apparent that they're on cables.
It's very difficult to pull off a decent flying scene without CGI, and I think that they sold it pretty well.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. The first beginning, third of this movie, that first act, is all about... it's Peter Banning. I always thought it was Peter Panning.
I always thought
my whole life, and then
closed captioning proved me wrong.
Do you watch them with closed captioning?
I always do.
I looked at the I'm
technically half deaf, so I have to.
Oh well, okay.
Or annoying my neighbors.
So the whole movie starts with it's like in Peter Pan Inception. It's like it starts off with a child's play of the Peter Pan story, and Peter's daughter Maggie is playing Wendy, and Peter's in the audience not paying attention to his children, which is the whole theme for the beginning part of this movie.
Yeah, he's basically...
Bad dad.
Yeah, he's basically Peter McAllister for the beginning of this movie. He's an important business guy. They don't ever state explicitly what his business is. Besides,
he
crushes acquisitions. All if he encounters any opposition.
He blows him out of the water.
Thanks, Jack. But he's too busy to pay any attention to his kids. So even at his daughter's play, which should be a big moment for a parent, he's on his cell phone quietly talking to his dude, trying to figure out how to push this deal through. And he gets asked to come to a morning meeting tomorrow, and he says yes to it. And his son Jack is like, "But you promised you'd be at my baseball game." And he's like, "We'll do a really early meeting. I promise I'll be there." And
my word is my bond.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, that doesn't happen.
So Jack, playing his baseball game, he's disappointed that his dad isn't there. And there's these scenes that they kind of flip-flop back and forth between the office, which is real fucking bizarre. The office scene where, like, everyone's, like, following
him
around.
It's like your generic bullshit office, you know? It's exactly what they want you to think, like...
Office culture is
big corporate headquarters, you know, everybody following Robin Williams around, just being like... Here's your, you know, note cards for the speech for, you know, the Wendy Hospital, blah, 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 like.
Oh, and then he has, like, the quick draw with the other guy with their cell
phones. They're fucking massive cell phones.
Yep.
They're, like, 90% battery pack.
Yeah, this was 1991, all right.
But he sends one of his, like...
He sends a guy to video record the baseball game.
Was it Rick?
What a shitty move.
That wasn't Rick Moranis, was it?
No, but he kind of looked like him.
It looked a lot like Rick Moranis.
Like, if he had just a strange cameo of, like, 30 seconds in this movie.
Yeah.
No. So anyway, Jack blows this game. He's expecting his dad to be there. He's waiting for his dad to, like, you know, he wants his dad to have his back, and he misses the curveball. He can't hit the curveball, and he blows the game. And then eventually Peter gets there. Obviously, everyone's already gone, and his family's pissed. So
why wouldn't they be?
I think immediately after...
Immediately cut to the Pan Am shot.
Which I never noticed until I was reading, like, trivia for this movie.
Yeah, but this was apparently a big deal. Like, one, Pan Am pumped a ton of money into this movie for that.
Promotion,
mm-hmm. And then they went under a week before the movie had its theatrical release. So it was just like, play on Pan, haha. Apparently it was like Captain Hook's voice, it's Dustin Hoffman on the announcement.
Yeah,
which, like, we'll come back to it later, but like, so part of me wants to like, was Spielberg trying to like make it seem like he was imagining this entire thing? Because, like, at the end of the film, like, there's that aspect where Dustin Hoffman's voice is the pilot's voice. Mm-hmm. And at the very end of the movie, Bob Hoskins is pushing bottles with a broom.
Yeah.
Like, are they trying to make it seem like he wasn't actually there? I mean, the only two characters, it was like the Wizard of Oz thing, where, like, and you were there, and you were there.
Well, I don't know. I kind of get a little of that. But then he hands Toodles his marbles.
That's true.
He could only have gotten his marbles if he was in Neverland. By the way, I want to jump ahead real quick. You know the fat lost boy?
Yeah.
Who Peter hands the sword to at the end of the
movie? Yeah.
Did you know that his official name on IMDb, like, he's literally credited as Thud Butt?
I did.
Thud Butt.
They all have names, and that was the
I
one that made...
I understand that, but Thud Butt was wow, that is a fat little kid, and you just crushed yourself.
Well, all the jokes were about him being fat,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think the guy acted again. I looked at his IMDb, and I don't think he did very much after this.
Well, he stayed in Neverland. He became the band.
He already got the fucking sword. What else does he need to do?
Career over.
That's true.
You peak when you're 9, you're done.
So, Peter and his family are on this flight, and Jack's pissed. He's...
First off, very important plot point that you're glossing over.
Which is that?
Robin Williams hates flying.
Oh, that's...
He really hates it.
He's definitely afraid of flying. He's terrified on this flight. And, I mean, he yells at Jack for acting like a child, too much like a child, and it's just, you know, it's kind of really right on the nose with, like, okay, we get it. You know, yeah. Peter Pan doesn't like kids. He hates his own kids. He hates flying.
It's not that he hates his kids. He just doesn't want to have to deal with them being children. I mean, who would?
Yeah, why can't they just fucking grow up?
Yeah, I mean, seriously. And yeah, you're right. It is a little on the nose because you have Peter Pan, the perpetual child, now all grown up and has no time for fantasies or children or, you know, he's kind of turned into like a regular dude and forgotten everything that he was. And so his daughter Maggie shows him this picture that his son drew of the plane exploding and all of their family members have parachutes except for Peter. And, that's when his wife is like, you should go talk to him, probably.
This is a clear sign that your son has some issues.
So he sits down next to him and he's like, well, how come I don't have a parachute, Jackie? He's like, oh, what do you think? And he keeps throwing his baseball against, like, the overhead mask compartment. And it breaks, and then Robin Williams freaks out because he's Robin Williams and he doesn't like to fly. And I'm basically trying to get to the point where we can skip ahead to Neverland and I can talk about how much I love Bob Hoskins. That's basically what's happening.
Right? Well, we can. I mean, this is a long movie. This is almost 2.5 hours. Yeah. So,
additionally, I do want to say that I still love this movie, but you could probably cut out a solid half hour.
So
or
much.
A better movie.
I think that's partly why. Like when I saw the running time, I think it's 2 hours 20.
Yeah.
And when I saw it, I was like, Jesus! I didn't think it was this long, but because they're in like. So we get to London. That's where we're headed. They're headed from, I don't know where they are in the U.S., but they're headed to London, where Maggie Smith is playing the Wendy, the original Wendy that the story of Peter Pan was based off of. She is Peter's wife's grandmother, great-grandmother.
Grandmother.
Maggie Smith was 52 at the time. And
they had to, like, age
they
her.
They aged her 40 years to be, like, a 92-year-old.
And they did a pretty good job because she looks pretty much exactly the same now.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I think that was the most striking part to me. I was just like, how long has Maggie Smith looked like a mummy?
Yeah, you know? How long has Maggie Smith been old?
Yeah.
Because she's been old forever. This is the first thing I ever saw her in, and she's always looked like that to me.
Yeah.
Real quick, just I was curious of the same thing, and I Googled Maggie Smith when she was younger. She was kind of hot when she was young.
Really? Not surprised.
We learned that it's been a super long time in between visits to London, where in Peter's...
10 years.
Yeah, 10 years between
visits. Decade.
He's a shitty dude.
Fuck you, Pan.
I don't know. There's an argument scene between Peter and his wife where, you know, it's just more of the same where he's so involved with work. He cares so much about his job that he's not paying attention to his family. And if he doesn't be careful, his kids are going to grow up and they're not going to want him around anymore.
But also, I don't know. It's kind of cool because at this point, like, you know, Maggie Smith clearly knows who he is.
Yeah.
You know, she has all the information and he has no memory of it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you know, she's just like, oh, what have you been doing? Are you still, like, you know, mergers and acquisitions? And he's just like, ah, I've been dabbling in land development and blah, blah, blah.
And, so, and then his son pipes up and says, oh, he blows them out of the water.
He takes what they have. And she's like, oh, you've become a pirate, Peter. Which is, like, another one of these, like, serious foreshadowings where everybody's like, how dare you? You, like, sharp inhale.
Peter's exploring the old house and you know, for some reason, Wendy is completely obsessed with, so do you guys get the vibe that Wendy is has been obsessed with Peter her entire life?
Yeah, she totally still wants to fuck him.
She can't imagine why.
She still comes
through your window when you're both, like, in the flowering of hormones and takes you off to a land where you never have to grow up, shows up, like, once a year for the rest of your life And he's just kind of like, always the one that got away.
Yeah.
The boy who lives forever.
And then it gets weird because he marries her granddaughter.
Yeah, do you think there's some kind of resentment there? I think there would.
I don't know. In reality, I think there would be, but I don't think Maggie Smith shows that in this movie.
Oh, I don't think she shows it, but I think that
if we're British, she's not going to show any of her feelings. Yeah. Like,
hanging on in quiet desperation is the English way.
My God.
Clearly born in the, like, of the Victorian age, you know, like...
It gets really weird because they go to that scene later in the movie where, like, Peter first sees Moira, who comes to be his wife, and that's when he decides, like, she's so hot, I'm never going back to Neverland.
It's not that he didn't love Wendy. He was just like, what if Wendy gets hotter?
Yeah, exactly. You know? He was waiting for his investment to pay off, and I guess he felt like it never did. And then she had a hot granddaughter, so he got on that train instead.
I guess it makes sense why he went into the line of work that he went into.
Yeah, exactly. Speculation, man. All over the field.
So, we're treated to a scene where he screams at his children when Brad, his partner back in the States, calls him that they're...
Such a business guy name, isn't it?
Brad, yeah. Do you think, Brad was the guy that he had the cell phone duel with, right? You think so?
I don't know, maybe.
He seemed like a Brad, right?
He looks like a Brad. He definitely looks like a Brad.
So Brad God calls him.
Gently with a chainsaw.
He calls and says that, hey, your $5 billion deal fell through because there's a cozy blue owl that is in the, its habitat is where you want to build whatever you're building, and we can't, the deal's gone, it's dead. So his kids are being kids around him, and he screams at them and tells them to shut up and get out. And that's when Wendy kind of sees him for his true colors. And you're bored. You want to get to Neverland, don't you?
Yeah. Yo, real quick, though.
Yeah.
I think this movie's a little hard on Peter Banning. $5 billion deal?
Yeah, dude, I would fucking...
Dude is under lucky. A lot of pressure. Like,
he's lucky. The kids are lucky they just got screamed at.
Because yeah.
My father is not a violent man, never has been, but if I cost him, or if he just lost $5 billion and I was being a dick around him, I'd have been through a window.
Yo, I would straight shoot someone for $100,000. Like, you know, $5 billion? I don't know what I would do.
So, breaking news, Steven's a hitman for hire.
Never said that. That's entrapment, goddammit.
Yeah, $5 billion is a lot of money to lose because of an owl or whatever.
So, Peter then takes Wendy to... the whole reason they're in London is because Wendy has... I guess she's opened up a hospital wing or...
A nearby hospital is opening up a wing in memory. Well, like, dedicated to...
To like lifetime Wendy. Of service. She's, taken in all of these orphans.
All the orphans. Yep.
Life.
So, Peter's giving, I guess, the keynote speech, and while he's there, and while they're all there celebrating Wendy's life...
I like the scene, by the way.
It was nice.
It was...
I think it's weirdly touching.
It's, like, the strongest scene in the entire first...
First part. Yeah,
absolutely.
You know?
And while they're all there, while the adults are there, the children are home sleeping with Liza, the annoying British housekeeper, I guess, and Toodles, crazy Toodles, who's lost his marbles.
Yeah.
And there's a scene of... I mean, it doesn't exactly show it, but the kids get kidnapped. And when they finally return home from this gala thing that they're doing, this award ceremony, they find the house is very bizarrely vandalized. Like, there's one broken window on the front door. There's, scratches up the wallpaper.
Gouging the wall all the way up to the children's room.
And they find that the kids are gone, and there is a... really sick note written in, like, old script.
Perfect calligraphy. Like, spend hours on it.
With a dagger stuck to the bedroom wall. Mm. Or, I'm sorry, the bedroom door. And basically it's saying that, you know, Captain James Hook took your children. Your children are being held to the request of... No, something like that.
I don't remember.
He wants Peter to come to Neverland is essentially what it's what he says. The next, you know, they call the police, and now
we have... best cameo in the movie.
For some weird reason.
Phil Collins is the lead inspector.
Fucking Phil Collins.
There are a lot of weird cameos in this movie. We'll get to them.
My favorite's coming up.
Well, you told me about that on a past episode. I don't remember when, but anyway. So yeah, Phil Collins is the lead inspector, and they're trying to figure out what happened with the kids, and later on that night, Moira, Peter, and Wendy are talking in the bedroom, and Wendy finally gets Peter alone. Makes Moira go downstairs.
Oh, could you get some tea, dear?
Like, and she gets real close to making out with Peter. It was real close.
Yo,
you have to admit it.
Yeah,
it's uncomfortably close.
And she basically is just like, don't you remember who you are? Like, you have to handle this. You have to take care of your kids. And she tells him that you are Peter Pan. Like, this is who you are. The one thing that was cool was that book that she was reading from was an actual original copy of Peter Pan. I don't know how much. I mean, I'm sure it was in some private library somewhere, but it's probably worth a fortune. You know, he says that he can't remember anything before he was 12 or 13 years old. That's basically is when he started forming his memories of life, is when he's like 12 or 13.
What do we got? That's when he gives up being the Pan, and, you know, he's met Moira at that point.
He's lurked over her creepily in bed and decided, you know, while asleep, he's like, I'm going to kiss her.
You know, like all 13-year-olds do.
So weird.
I think the point they're trying to make is that he doesn't remember being, you know, a kid or a baby or going through the, you know, basically all he remembers is after Neverland, when he finally decides that he's going to give up the eternal life. Which I don't care how hot Moira is. You're giving up eternal life and eternal childhood and going to get a job and shit.
I've got my own theory about this. We'll get to it. All right. But okay. I think I've got some pretty solid evidence.
I'd like to hear it too. So we're almost in Neverland. So then later that night, Peter's been drinking heavily, and he thinks, as one does after they've lost their children.
And by the way, I like how Phil Collins' advice is just like, well, get some sleep and we'll probably find out in the morning.
Probably a prank. You're just like, what?
Somebody stole my kids, motherfucker. Are you calling it a prank?
Considering the family history. You know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, very funny. But someone still stole my fucking kids, dude.
To be fair, Phil Collins right there has one of my favorite lines where he's just like, Toodles comes up. He's like, I've forgotten how to fly. And he's like, well,
one does. That is one of my favorite lines, too.
There's a lot of good little jokes like that throughout, and that's
what I didn't catch as a kid, I guess.
No, you're, like, so focused on the action.
Right.
And then
there are so... And we'll... again, we'll spend so much time with Shmi and Captain... Captain Shmi.
Little Shmi, big Shmi.
Like, those dialogue, it's my favorite scene in the whole movie.
Agreed.
And then the scene between like Peter Hook and Smee, it's like there's so many little subtle hints of dialogue that like I watched this movie twice for this episode and I never noticed them before and it was perfect. But anyway, Tinkerbell shows up.
Boo. This is the whole thing you could cut out. If you cut out every fucking stupid ass Julia Roberts goddamn bullshit Tinkerbell scene.
She was nominated, she might have won, for a Razzie for her role in
this. Good, because she was fucking terrible in this movie.
She was real bad.
I love Julia Roberts, and she is insufferable in this movie.
And she was insufferable to have on the set. They started calling her Tinker Hell because they couldn't put up with her.
Didn't she have like a nervous breakdown?
Yeah.
I didn't see why, but there was a point where Spielberg went to the hospital where she was kind of like having bed rest, like, because she wasn't coping. I also heard that she had, she hired an assistant just to clean her feet when she was on set because she was flying the entire time. Yeah. So she had somebody just cleaning her feet while she was suspended from, cables.
So now that we're here, this is my theory that Pan didn't leave Neverland because he fell in love. He was trying to get away from Tink.
His stalker.
So much sense.
That like, does make sense.
You know, you're surrounded. You're like, basically this fairy doesn't leave you alone, is attached at your hip constantly, stole you from your parents, has raised you, only wants you to like party with it all the time, and then you found a way back to the real world, and the woman that you fell in love with is now well past your age, so you're just like, all right, next best thing. You got a granddaughter? Cool, because I got to get away from Neverland and this crazy fucking fairy that will not leave me alone. Yeah, fuck eternal life. It's hell if you're just with Julia Roberts all the time.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Tinkerbell seems like the kind of fairy who would have like 4 or 5 MySpace profiles and kept trying to trick.
Yep,
Trying to trick Steven into going out with her again.
I kept getting the vibe of what's the fucking fairy's name in Zelda? Ocarina.
Oh,
hey, Nobby. Listen, listen. hey. So they
Upsy, shut up.
That's pretty good.
That's awesome. Not wrong. No, he's not. So they get into an argument about whether or not fairies are real and whether or not he's Peter Pan. And he eventually maliciously tries to murder her. Yeah. When she says, whenever somebody says they don't believe in fairy, somewhere a fairy falls down dead.
I don't believe in fairy.
He screams at her and she falls over with, I don't know if they were intending on making this, like her faking her death or a real death scene.
I've never been able to determine
that. When I was younger, this scene fucked with me so bad because I was like, he just killed Tinkerbell, what the fuck? And... Because 6-year-old Steven is like freely swearing. Yeah. But no, it's just like Tinkerbell just falls over, and I was really upset. And watching it now, I'm just like, clearly just
conniving bitch.
Just faking it. What the fuck is wrong with you?
So he collapses and brings her back to life. And then she basically knocks him out and wraps him up in a towel and takes him to Neverland.
Yeah, fucking steals him again. Yeah.
So. That scene when they're flying over London, mm-hmm. you know, the couple that's kissing on the bridge?
And they float away.
Apparently it's George Lucas and Carrie Fisher.
Yeah,
I read that.
As another weird uncredited
Carrie
cameo.
Fisher also apparently like did a rewrite on the script, like a final rewrite.
Oh.
She was like editing a draft or something. I don't know. The more I read about this, the more it just seemed like Spielberg, Lucas, and Fisher just hanging out all the time and like fucking with this movie.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
pretty good.
Turned out okay. Like,
so they get to Neverland. Tank drops him in the middle of the pirate area,
which is fucking stupid.
Right.
Fucking stupid.
I know that he has to get his kids, and I know that's where the kids are.
Yeah,
but does why?
Tinkerbell really fucking believe that? Oh, I'm gonna take 45-year-old Peter Pan, drop him off in Pirate Town, and expect him to fucking live like it's big thing.
Here's the whole thing. There's a bigger conspiracy at work here.
I love conspiracy theories.
Because,
let's hear it.
You know, you're going. We'll get to it in a second, but basically, you know, Robin Williams is dropped into Pirate Town. He tries to reason with some pirates, which works out wonderfully every single time. And they respond by trying to take his fancy boots.
Yeah.
Where you get them boots.
Jimmy Buffett being a cameo in that scene.
Yep.
Yep.
So what happens is Tink defeats 6 pirates for Pan, dresses him up, and they walk up onto the ship where, you know, there's Captain James Hook. Mm. Announcing, like, what, he, like, stole the Pan's kids, and he's just like, you know, Pan is coming, and you all thought I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Who thought I couldn't do it?
Who thought I couldn't do it?
Yeah.
Who, yeah.
To the boo box with you.
Yeah, so the boo box. The boo box fucked me up when I was a kid.
Yo, scary as hell.
Because, I mean, obviously I know it's, like, a bad thing, because there's pirates, and pirates are the bad guys. When I was a kid, this is my kid logic. But I thought, like, what if does this happen? Like, are people going to take me... If I, like, fuck up at work when I'm older, is somebody gonna, like, fucking take me and put me in a box full of scorpions?
What's the discipline plan here? Like, I should really start asking that on job interviews.
And the,
like...
real quick, my favorite cameo of the movie, the pirate who gets put in the boo box, Glenn Close.
Right.
Yes.
I can see it now.
I can see, you know, you can see it in its face, but
it's...
before you know that.
Right, a long time, one of our... earlier episodes, you told me
that.
Yeah,
I mentioned that. We were talking about the boo box for some reason.
Okay, and I never knew that. It was kind of blew my mind, and now I can't not see it.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is awesome. I mean, it, she does a good job.
Yeah.
But anyway, she does.
She really does not want to go in the boo box.
No, yeah. She doesn't.
Who would?
But anyway, it is revealed in due time that, you know, the pirate with the patch and the hobble is not really a pirate, but it's the Pan, and he claims that he's not the Pan. He swears that he's not the Pan, and who kind of buys it? He's just like, Shmi, I thought you said this was the Pan.
It's flippin', floppin', flyin' pain!
And he says, I have here, I've got dental records, x-rays, a signed affidavit by 1 T. Bell. First off...
Whoa, really? That's what he says?
Yeah, he says that. Fucking Tinkerbell sold Pan out to Shmi. Yep, this is him, this is Peter Banning, this is what he looks like now, these are his kids. You should steal him. Get Pan back to Neverland. How is that? Like, this is the conspiracy. This whole thing was set up by Tinkerbell to get Peter Pan back to Neverland.
Whoa.
Like, she straight up rats him out to the pirates, his sworn enemies, so they can steal his children.
I've always wondered how fucking Hook is able to find him in the real world.
That was something that never made sense to me as a kid. It's just like, oh, I guess he just knows. But if he just knew, why didn't he come after him, like, years earlier?
Yeah.
And then now it's because...
T. Bell sold him the fuck out.
Yeah.
You just blew my mind a little
dude,
bit.
What a bitch. God, I
like
Julie Roberts.
straight up, yeah, Hook is a bad guy, but the movie is named Hook. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not Peter Pan. It's not, you know, Return to Neverland. It's Hook. This is a story about Hook. So who's the real antagonist here? Tinkerbell is just playing off of Hook's, like, weird neurotic fixations.
So Hook, what you're saying is Hook is the true hero of the story.
I mean, I'm not saying that he's the hero. I'm saying he's anyone trying to kill Peter Pan is my hero.
No, it's just, well, first of all, you know, I always side with the bad guys.
So that's true.
I'm still a Colonel Chi sympathizer. But if you think about it, if what you're saying is true, and Tinkerbell set him up for this, then really Hook is the true hero of the story, because without Hook, Peter never would have stood up to his real oppressor, who was Tinkerbell, and ever gotten home to live a real life. Because unless he dealt with this now, Tinkerbell was going to keep doing that thing.
Hook where even,
he keeps
like,
trying to get him to come back to Neverland and
like,
open his
Hook
house.
Hook has to sacrifice himself for this. This is like the Jesus story, essentially. Hook is Christ in this analogy. But, no, like, you look
forgive
at,
them, Shmi. They know not what they do.
You look at Hook's character throughout this. He, like, tries to be a good dad to Jack. To show, like, love and support in ways that Jack never experienced. And, like, there's some, like, malicious intent behind it. But
he is a pirate, after all.
He's a pirate.
I think he actually kind of dug being a dad, though.
He like, seems to get into it towards the end. And then on top of that, in his little, like, aside with Shmi, you see that this is a person with, like, severe psychological issues.
Yeah.
Like, he has this fixation on time and clocks, and he's lost his hand, and he's, like, prone to suicide.
Don't try to stop me, Shmi.
Yeah, and, like, on top of all of this, Tinkerbell is just fixated on Peter Pan, someone who left her 40 years ago, and she's just like, who can help me get Pan back? The fucking crazy guy that's also obsessed with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, this whole thing was orchestrated by this vicious little fairy to fulfill some, like, weird crush that she's had for, like, 150 years.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
It's a good theory. It's a solid theory.
I don't think it was written that way, but
it definitely comes off that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where are we? Oh, so Hook brings the kids up in this net. He has them suspended from, like, the top of the ship. And he's basically like, if you're Peter Pan, go fly and get your kids. Like, we'll just call it a day right now. And he is terrified of heights, and he climbs up the mast, and he fails at getting his kids. And he and Hook and Tinkerbell negotiate their war. That's that again. That's the weird part.
Again.
She's willing to have. She's
children,
willing to
an army of small children get murdered.
Yeah,
she's willing to sacrifice
sure
them.
Gets back.
And she like comes like Hook is ready to let them go at this point. He's like, "This isn't the Pan. You're fucking
fuck
wrong. This isn't like we got
whatever.
The wrong guy. This isn't the Pan." And Tink is just like, "Nope. Give me a week. I can bring it back." He's just like,
3 days.
Four. Or wait, no,
what did she say?
3 days, bare minimum for a good pan.
Something like that, yeah.
Which, first off, how long is 3 days in Neverland?
Oh.
I don't know.
They do have days and nights.
Yeah.
Also,
they
real
also
quick.
They have a whole lot of moons, so who knows what their lunar cycle is like.
Real quick, the scene later on in the movie when, like, you get, like, the flashbacks of Peter going back and forth between Wendy. Mm-hmm. Like, he ages between those trips. How does he age if you can't get older in Neverland?
I think there's, like, some weird thing with, like, it's got to be some relativity issue.
When Tinkerbell kidnaps the baby from London, she takes an infant to Neverland, who then grows up in Neverland. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense.
But he does, like, in the time that Wendy ages from, like, 12 to, we'll say, 60, because she's supposed to be 92 when Peter comes back, you know, to marry Moira. Or, like, she's 92 at the movie, so 30 years back when he's, like, 13... You know, she's going to be in her 60s. So over the span of, like, 50 years of their, like, knowing each other, he ages maybe two.
So how long has Hook been there?
So, like, 1 year in Neverland is 25 years on Earth. So
also, you have to imagine that he spends, you know, a couple, and what do you think, one night a year on Earth? Or do you think that it's, like, long more than that? I haven't read the story in a long time, so I don't know how often he's supposed to visit Wendy or whatever.
I have no idea.
But, you know, every time he's on Earth, he's aging at the same speed
a normal child would.
Good point.
And so, like, if he spends, you know, all told, a year on Earth spending time with Wendy and Michael and John.
I was going to say Tum-Tum, so I don't know.
Yeah. No, Tum-Tum is not in this movie. So, yeah, you know, he ages that way, I guess. I don't have an answer as to how the infant ages. Or how any of the other characters ever got to Neverland in the first place. Because at some point, Hook was probably just like a regular pirate who somehow wound up in space.
Yeah. I mean, if we're working like a 1 to 25 ratio, like the 3 days in Neverland that he's there is like 75 days. He's there for like an entire season.
Also, so does that mean that Peter Banning was unconscious in the snow in London for like 21 days? And they just left him out there?
28 days later? I don't know. We'll figure that out.
That's weird.
So,
we are reading way too far into this.
Yes, well, now I'm just challenged in the special relativity of Neverland.
Where is this? Honestly, Interstellar would have been a much better movie if it was all about Neverland and Earth. I actually would have cared, probably.
I don't know. I'm getting us back from. I'm getting us away from quantum physics and relativity, and bringing us back to Peter Pan.
You can't reach
his kid. Close is in the boo box. Is Glenn Close alive or dead? Well, we don't know until we open the boo box.
It's definitely Schrodinger's boo box because you could probably survive a box full of scorpions for a little while at least.
Sure, if you squash him.
Well, they put her in first, and then they put the scorpions in.
Yeah.
So she'd probably, like, flop around and take a few out. But anyway, so fat, out of shape, Peter Banning whispers something to Captain Hook, who then laughs in his face because apparently Peter Pan has a real problem with heights, which is a line I like. And then he tries to climb up the rigging and reach out for his stupid kid's hands, and they're begging for him to reach. And honestly, like, he probably could have reached him if he tried a little.
Oh, yeah, he wasn't trying. He doesn't like his kids.
Yeah.
Why would he try and reach something he doesn't like?
Well, because his kids remind him of the Lost Boys and, you know, being trapped under the tyrannical rule of Tinkerbell.
He's got to push that memory back down deep.
Exactly.
So this is where one of the scenes where I really loved Dustin Hoffman's like performance as Hook.
Because so
the way he pronounces certain words, like I wrote down a specific quote when he was just like, "Oh, come now, explode out of the air, end the charade." Like, this, like, that kind
end
of...
the charade.
He just, like, it just, I don't know.
He's awesome.
It's perfect.
He's such a good Captain Hook.
So, he eventually gives up, I guess. He's just like, I can't reach my kids. Well, fuck it. Kill them. I don't... Kids. Yeah, he's just like, we'll kill them all. And he goes, and that's when he gets upset. But eventually, when Tinkerbell negotiates this, like, three-day thing, when they're celebrating about 3 days, we'll have a war, they knock Peter, who is tied behind his back, into the ocean, off the ship.
Yep.
Where he gets rescued by mermaids, and
I'm into it.
Three mermaids make out with him, and they're
breathing air into his lungs. They're making
out with him. They missed him too. Apparently, 13-year-old Peter Pan was a bit of a slut back in Neverland.
Well,
I mean, you remember in Peter Pan where Wendy's just like, "What are those mermaids doing down there, flipping their tails?" And they're like all waving to Peter. Do you not remember this from the cartoon?
I haven't seen the cartoon in so long. But
I mean, it's kind of heavily implied that
he bangs the mermaids,
fucking everything.
Yo, real quick, my friend's sister is a professional mermaid in Hawaii.
Yo, what the fuck? I know this is a real thing. I know for a fact that is an actual job. But hearing the sentence, "My friend's sister is a professional mermaid in Hawaii."
Yeah, she. My friend.
Delivery. Yo, real quick.
Yo, real quick sidebar, professional mermaid, 2 degrees.
Her Instagram is awesome. Just, it's the weirdest shit I've ever seen. Anyway, moving back to Hook, he gets placed in a big shell and taken up to the Lost Boy city, I guess. I like the set design. I thought it was...
Set design is awesome.
When they have, like, the little, like, I don't know, maybe not robotic, but the puppets of, like, the flowers and all that stuff.
Yeah, and the, like, this is the penguins when he comes down, the little ice slide thingy. I thought that was cool.
So, he eventually stumbles upon, like, the center of this, like, Lost Boy City, and Tinkerbell realizes he's back. Oh, yeah, he, like, I don't know, gets caught in, like, a rope...
Yeah, he gets caught in a
trap or something. And she wakes up all the Lost Boys and makes them all go see Pan, who's back.
Also putting his life in danger yet again because she knows that the Lost Boys believe all grown-ups are bad. And is like, hey, there's a grown-up. Hey, look, everyone. Peter's back. And they get them all excited, and then they wake up and find this, like, fat old grown-up, and they're like, well, kill him.
Yeah, well, grown-ups are pirates. He's clearly a grown-up, therefore mm-hmm. he must be a pirate. Exactly. It's sound logic.
It absolutely is, if you're a Lost Boy. So then he gets chased around.
Well, we got introduced to Rufio,
yeah,
who is...
Come on.
Oh!
That was only one kid. It was like, everybody does the Rufi.
Oh, yeah, the one kid goes out. Good point.
So Rufio is a slightly older kid who rules over the Lost Boys in the place of Peter Pan. He has an awesome haircut. And what, you don't think he has an awesome haircut?
Yeah, well, he does, but I don't think anyone would rock it today.
The tri-mohawk?
You gonna go for a tri-mohawk?
No.
Alright. How awesome is that haircut, then? It's an awesome haircut if you wouldn't wear it yourself.
Nah. He tells the kids that he's not a pirate, he's a lawyer, and that's when they start chasing him around. Kill the lawyer.
I'm not that kind of lawyer.
And, I don't know. They chase him around the Lost Boy City. It's kind of stupid.
I could have done without the scene being as long as it is.
Yeah. Most of the scenes from this point on until the end of the movie are kind of useless. We could do without the majority of the second act. We could do without the majority of the first act.
I could have dealt with a whole movie of Peter and Hook and Smee as a Glengarry, Glenn Ross type movie where it's just dialogue in like two locations. I could have watched a whole movie of that. But Tinkerbell eventually starts talking to the kids and starts telling them, like, you have to understand, like, he's lost his children. He is grown up, but he's not a bad guy. And she tries to convince him, like, hey, you know, let's give him a chance. And I don't know. Rufio is he doesn't care for him. He doesn't want to deal with it. But eventually they decide to keep him as a little toy and train him for 3 days.
No, because you have the youngest Lost Boy.
Right.
The tiniest Lost Boy who just kind of like stares at him and starts like conducting facial reconstructions, you know, and finally goes, oh, there you are, Peter.
Which, as a kid actor, I liked this kid. Yeah. I thought he was pretty good. Much better than Maggie.
I also, for some reason, I don't know why he exists, but I like the Lost Boy that's like from the 1950s with like the slicked over hair and the used car salesman jacket.
Yeah, he's from Sleepers.
Yeah,
he was a lost boy. Kevin Bacon had his way
that's
with
fucking
him.
Dark man.
Yeah, he just
he ran away after he left that whatever that
fucking correctional facility.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'll buy it. This is a happy ending at least.
So they decide to give him a chance, and yeah, after the kid like says, oh, you know, that is Peter, and they all start touching his face, and it's odd, but anyway, the next scene is my favorite scene of the entire movie, and this is where we're back on the ship, and
so good.
And Hook is upset about the day. He's depressed that he spent all this time trying to find Peter, and it's just a waste of time. You know, it doesn't matter, and life isn't really worth living anymore, and he decides to kill himself, and like you said earlier...
Apparently this happens all the time.
Right, he's not again.
Yeah,
don't try to stop me.
Shmee, stop me. Your ass, we're talking about suicide! As he's got a gun to his head.
And he eventually says, after Shmee saves him from killing himself, he's just like, I want to die. And he's just like, there's no adventure here anymore. And then, you know, Smee's like, you call this no adventure? And he's like, oh, death is the only adventure I have left, Smee.
A poignant theme that comes up again later in the movie.
It does. But it's during the scene after he decides to not kill himself. You know, he sits down and
well, this is where Shmee comes up with the brilliant plan. If he really wants to hurt Peter Pan, instead of having a war or whatever, he should just take his kids and make his kids love Hook. What would be a more terrible punishment than that? You can already kind of tell that Jack isn't real thrilled with his fucking shitty dad who couldn't reach 2 more inches. And honestly, dude, if all you have to do is touch your kid's hand in order to save their lives,
jump.
Fucking jump.
That fear of heights, dude.
Still. There's no, like, paternal instinct to protect his children there.
He doesn't like them.
You will not get off that he does not like his kids.
Do you think he likes his kids yet?
I think he...
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope, you waited too long.
I think that he... I don't think that he respects his children. I think that he has them, and
he has children.
I think he probably
that is fact. He likes Maggie as hell.
He likes Maggie. He hates Jack.
He hates Jack because Jack is kind of a dick. He's at that age, you know.
He just wants him to go to his baseball games. He is such a dick.
How many more baseball games do you think he'll want you to come to?
Ooh, I think it cut him a little deep in that one.
Yeah.
So they decide, yeah, we're going to force the kids.
Brainwash the kids into.
And this is when he has that really awesome laugh, which I'm not going to try to recreate because I can't do it. But then we have a training scene. I think we can gloss over a lot of this training scene. Where the Lost Boys are trying, I mean, unless you guys want to talk about it, they're trying to teach him how to, first of all, make him run because he's overweight, how to fight, how to fly. They just shoot him out of a slingshot.
Well, because they're trying to get him to think a happy thought so he can fly, and they figure the slingshot would probably give him the momentum to at least, you know, glide a little. How depressed do you think Peter Banning is that he can't come up with one happy thought in order, because fucking everyone else is like, well, my happy thought was like, cheeseburgers, like whatever. Yeah. Like,
he has nothing. He hates
nothing.
His life.
Makes him happy.
It's we're bleak. All sitting. I know nobody who's listening to this can see us, so we're all just kind of like sitting back in our chairs, trying to imagine our own happy thoughts. And we have all waited far too long.
Well, I guess the question is, like, how legitimate does the happy thought have to be?
It has to make you happy. The only barometer.
Okay, if that's the only barometer, then I think all of us could come up with a whole lot of things that make us happy enough to be able to fly in Neverland, which is really disturbing. How dark is Peter Banning's life that he's like, well, I have a wife, but I don't really care.
You think he likes his kids? Well, he has them. Yeah.
Well, eventually, it is his kids that makes him... You know,
eventually.
Yeah, but it takes him a couple days to realize that he likes his kids.
Yeah, no, it's kind of sad.
So, it was during this training scene that I could really see how this ran over budget and why Steven Spielberg almost didn't have any more kids because of the children actors in this movie. There's so much coordinated action, running, dancing scenes. And you can, like... I like watching extras in large scenes in movies because I like seeing the guys that don't really know what they're doing and they're kind of like looking around to see what the other extras are doing. And there was so much of that with these kids. But anyway, let's skip ahead to the next Hook scene, which is obviously better than the Peter scenes.
Yeah. Indisputably.
Where Professor Hook is teaching the class entitled Why Parents Hate Their Children.
So good.
And my next line in this, my notes was just like, I like Hook and Dustin Hoffman much more than anyone else in this movie, hands down.
Well, yeah.
Just because he's just going over this lesson of why Maggie and Jack's parents hate them. It's basically like...
He makes a lot of good points.
He makes a lot. And I was wondering, so I had a pretty happy childhood. Like, my parents are pretty good people.
Yeah.
I wondered how many kids watched this movie and be like, my parents do that. My dad does that.
Oh my god, yeah.
Like, and they had some relationship. Do my parents actually, like, while they're in the theater, like, does my dad hate me?
Probably.
But, what has he said? He says, he tells them that their parents were happier before they had kids.
They went to movies,
he's made up just to
see the sunrise, yeah.
So, I don't think my dad ever said that to me as a kid. My dad says this so many times now that I'm an adult. He's just like, if I didn't have kids, I'd be happier kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Or like, don't ever have kids, you'll be a happier person. He says that all the time now. Oh yeah, he says, before you were born, your parents were happier, they were free.
Yeah.
Oh. And that's what sets off Maggie. She tries to tear off his hook. But
my mother loves me. She read me a story. Oh, well, do you know why she read you the story? So you would shut up and go to bed.
So eventually,
how true is that? By the way, it is so great not having kids.
My sister has a kid, and you know, he's cool and all, but I am happy I don't have any children.
So, this past week, I had to pick my girlfriend up from the airport, and while I was waiting on her flight to get in, I watched this father deal with his child, where his child would take his blanket and throw it on the baggage carousel, and his dad would pick it up. He would say, don't do that. And as soon as he would pick it up, the kid would start screaming and insist to have his blanket back. So dad would give him his blanket back, and he would hold on to it for 2 seconds and then immediately throw it on the baggage carousel again. And finally, his dad was like, I'm going to throw this away, and picked it up and walked off with it. And the kid loses his shit. And so finally, he, like, sits him down with his grandparents And he's just like, I'm just gonna go put this in, like, the luggage or whatever. And the kid will not stop screaming. Kid screams for a solid 15 minutes.
Ooh.
And the entire experience just reminded me, it's just like, even if on that off chance you do produce, like, some sort of sparkling, genius-loving offspring, the odds are much higher that you are going to have a piece of shit. Think about how many pieces of shit you know in this world.
Oof, there's a lot.
Think about how many good people you know in this world.
Handful.
Yeah, same thing with kids.
Yeah.
So, Maggie eventually gets kicked out of the class, good. And then...
well, she gets an F, and she gets an F. About it.
And then, but Jack is, he's on board. He's starting to already kind of lean towards Hook and his thought processes. After this, you know, we're starting to see, we're back to Peter in the Lost Boy area.
And he's, the food fight scene?
He's sore from his day of yeah, work, yeah. And then he wanders towards where he smells the food cooking. Mm-hmm. And he goes down to the long table where there's like 30 kids hanging out, and he's really excited about eating dinner, and then there's all these plates served, and there's no food on it. And the kids tell them that it's a game. You have to pretend to eat. Mm-hmm. And he's pissed because he's an adult, and you don't pretend to eat. You eat when you're hungry.
Yeah, he wants some fucking food.
I love the part where he, like, picks up his spoon, and one of the kids is like, oh, no, we don't use those. He's like, well, then why do you have them? He's like, so we don't have to use them.
Oh, child logic.
But, so Rufio is, you know, he starts making fun of Peter, and he starts calling him names.
With him so hard.
Yeah, he's just like, I don't know what he says to start off this whole thing, but...
Baboon bubble butt.
They get into this name-calling scene, and it's... There's... Again, I always remember Rufio's lines, because as a kid, I remembered the more simple things. Yeah. But some of the things that Peter says are...
He calls him a substitute chemistry teacher, or something like that.
Prison barber.
Yeah.
He calls him a nearsighted gynecologist, which is my favorite insult.
So funny. Yeah. So funny.
Really good.
To which Rufio replies, in your face, camel cake. So there's a difference in level of insults being thrown back and forth. But anyway, they go back and forth, and eventually Peter kind of...
He wins.
He wins.
Contest.
Yeah, essentially. He calls him a paramecium brain, and that's what sends him off. And after he... You posted this online the other day where... Rufio's final response is, you man! You stupid, stupid man!
That's a pretty big insult for someone who's perpetually a child.
Stupid.
To be stupid. A boy is great, but to be a man is something terrible.
I don't know. To be a man would be an awfully great adventure.
I just want to say real quick that when Peter finally imagines and he can see the food, whatever that multicolored pastel pudding shit is looks fucking delicious.
It looks like just straight up icing.
It's all just straight up icing. I don't think it was anything but sugar.
Oh, that's fine. I'd eat it.
Oh, yeah. I remember that as a kid. The whole thing looked great.
Yeah.
So he eventually remembers how to pretend, I guess, and they start...
You're doing it, Peter.
Well, the click is that.
You're playing.
He picks up a spoon.
He picks up a spoon, which, you know, we have it so we don't have to use it, and pretends to flick something.
Right.
You know, Rufio's face. And then that moment where he just, like, buys into it enough to just, like, fuck around with someone... The world opens up. Like his third eye comes in, all the chakras are aligned, and suddenly Pan is back.
And, they end up having, you know, he starts eating, and eventually some kid throws more pudding, I guess, at Peter, and they have a food fight, which is a pretty awesome scene. They probably could only have filmed once.
Yeah.
They could have done it more than once, right? A one take, yeah. Just seven cameras on the scene, go. And
it ends when Rufio gets pissed and tries to throw a coconut at Pan's head, but somebody throws Pan the sword just in time for him to swing around all cool and cut it in half.
Very uncoordinated. You could tell Robin
Williams is not a sword fighter. He looks
he was like real tight to his
yeah.
But he cuts
like T-Rex arms.
But he cuts the coconut in half and and everyone's amazed. And that's it. I mean, we move on to Maggie singing. A real stupid song.
A relic of the obnoxious. Musical. Michael Jackson musical that never came to be.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember what it was. Maggie sings a song and it makes all the pirates sad and wish that they wanted their mothers, essentially.
Actually, just reminded me, when we get to the end of this movie, there's a quote from this movie that my sister uses all the time whenever I piss her off, which is a lot because, you know, she's my older sister, and it always makes me laugh. So just remind me I need to get to that.
Okay.
Because it's the worst delivered line in the whole movie, and it never fails to make me laugh.
Okay. So the next scene, Hook is sleeping, and we see his little Hook mustache
twitching.
Here's Jack's, earlier in the movie, Peter gave Jack his pocket watch, and Jack has it with him, and it falls kind of out of his pocket as he's sleeping, and because it's ticking, Hook gets pissed off and gets a little maniacal.
Because he hates clocks.
He hates clocks.
The crocodile that ate his hand ate a clock at some point, so the crocodile ticks.
So he takes Jack to this weird little clock graveyard that he has in this little room, and he gives him a hammer. He's basically just like, go fuck up all the clocks you want and just say all the bad things that your dad has done to you. He's just like, he just starts destroying things, and he destroys Peter's pocket watch in the process.
Yeah, it's pretty pretty dark.
But he convinces Jack during the scene, this is that pivot moment where he convinces Jack that Neverland is his home. He doesn't have a real home, this is his home now.
How does he do it? By letting Jack smash a bunch of clocks.
Yeah.
Which would sell me.
Yeah.
You know?
If you get to destroy shit.
I am 28 years old. I watched this movie recently for this podcast, and I thought, God, I wish I had a hammer and some clocks.
Or that just like a room fun. Full of clocks.
That looked like fun.
Looked way more fun than the food fight, in all honesty.
Yeah.
There have been so many times in my life where I just wish I had a bat and something to destroy, because you just want to destroy things sometimes.
Yeah. Well, at one point in my life, I was the manager of a Halloween store. And at the end of the season, we had all this shit that we had to get rid of, and or either send back to like the company, I guess. But there was a bunch of shit that was getting destroyed, and my store, for some reason, had a sledgehammer in it, so I let all the employees who were, like, teenagers come outside with me and grab, like, the pennied-out CDs of, like, shitty-ass Halloween music, and we had a contest. We stacked the CDs as high as we could, and whoever could smash through the most of them at one time got to take some, I don't know, like, a prop home, like an animatronic Jason Voorhees or something. But yeah, smashing shit with a hammer, most fun you'll ever have. I highly recommend it.
So we went from one bad scene with the singing to a fun scene with the clocks to another bad scene of the baseball game. Did you like the scene?
I don't like it. No. I don't think it's a bad
scene. I got irritated by the scene. Anyway.
I got irritated by the overbearing nature of, like, Jack's realization. I think the scene itself is kind of fine.
Yeah.
But...
Well, because Hook the dad is just trying to recreate what Jack is used to, make him feel a little bit more accepted because he loves this game of baseball. The Pirates probably never fucking played baseball before. But he whips up some uniforms and a shitty baseball diamond and is like, ah, let's have fun, you know? There's the scene where he shoots the guy.
He shoots the guy who's stealing second?
Yeah, the pitcher shoots the guy. That was funny.
I did laugh at that.
Laugh at Ernest Scared Stupid, you can laugh at that.
I did laugh at that.
If you laugh more than once in a scene, it means you liked it.
Okay, all right, fair enough. But so, you know, they're having this baseball game and Peter is there with some Lost Boys that are pretending to be pirates, and their plan is to steal Hook's hook and run away. That's, you know, I don't know why they do that, but that's part of their plan.
Well, because that's something that they're trying to get Peter to be able to
do things that Peter would do.
And that was something Peter used to do. He used to steal Hook's hook.
But
honestly, kind of a dick move, because you're stealing an amputee's prosthetic.
Have a disabled, like, mentally ill person, and you're just fucking with him.
Yeah.
Not to mention that it was him that caused the disability in the first place.
Yeah, he cut off his hand in the first place.
So, anyway, he gets distracted by Jack playing baseball, and Jack's up to bat. You know, basically a recreation of the scene from the beginning of the movie, where, you know, even though they were just explained baseball, Smee knows how to throw a curveball, which Jack notoriously can't hit, but he hits here and wins the game. And everyone's...
Yeah, but don't forget the Pirates who are chanting, run home, Jack.
Oh, right.
Run home, Jack. And everybody's like, oh.
Luke's like, no.
You got it backwards. Everybody's like, oh, home run, Jack. Home run, Jack. The obvious implication being like, Jack, remember your home? You have a home, Jack. Run
and
home
gets
to
the
it.
Spacey look in his eyes like, what are they? Oh, he's like, he doesn't, he's been to Neverland for like 20 minutes and doesn't remember that he had a real life before this.
Well, you know, Neverland makes you forget. Yeah. That's what they say. But anyway, he hits a home run. He wins the game. Hook says he's proud of him.
Is that why Michael Jackson named his ranch Neverland?
Couldn't tell you.
I don't know.
It makes you forget what happened to you while you were in Neverland?
Ooh.
Allegedly. Guilty until proven innocent.
But anyway, Peter leaves because he's depressed because his child
doesn't even want the hug anymore. He's like,
his child's associating more with a pirate than with him, for good reason.
Yeah.
But anyway, he runs away, and he's at this point now he's desperate to remember how to fly because he's like starting to jump off rocks and stuff.
Yeah, he's like climbing shit and jumping off of it. Also, looks like fun.
Eventually gets hit in the head by the same baseball. I don't know what the physics are. I know we've already talked about the quantum physics
gravity
and relativity.
Way different.
Neverland,
yeah.
And he gets hit in the head with a baseball, and he all of a sudden can see his former reflection in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And
reminiscent of the scene with the shadow from the cartoon.
Right, and he sees
like helping him realize.
His shadow is there, and it's helping him kind of get back to their original hideout, which I did vaguely remember from the cartoon,
yeah.
Like in the tree where, you know, they were all living at, in the cartoon. I don't know. He finds a teddy bear. He sees Tinkerbell and he's.
What is it? Is Julia Roberts crying in the scene?
Is she?
I think so.
Yeah, she could
like,
be
bummed.
Yeah,
but he remembers.
He finds Toodle's marbles there. Too.
He finds the marbles. He finds his old teddy bear, and that's when he remembers his childhood. And we get this flashback scene where he's remembering his mother, he's remembering being a baby. Mm-hmm. He has the realization as an infant about his own mortality. He's
which
like,
I can relate to. You know.
You know, he knew as a newborn that one day he'd grow up and he'd have to die someday.
Grows up, dies.
Yeah. And he didn't want to do that. So he, like Ghostbusters 2, made his stroller roll down a hill. Where eventually
do you think Viggo the Carpathian has something to do with that?
I think he would be in Neverland.
Absolutely, yeah.
But eventually Tink finds him, and this is all in this scene, and he, I don't know, what we cut next to him having a child, or him, this is when we see all the flashbacks of him and Moira,
yeah.
Right?
And he comes back to visit Wendy, and every time she gets a little bit older, a little bit older, a little bit older, a little bit older. Until one time, the last time he comes, she's like, I'm too old, I'm not fucking going to Neverland with you, I blew your shot at this Maggie Smith hotness. By the way, I have a granddaughter over there sleeping in the corner if you want to, you know, creep on her.
Which he does.
Exactly what happens, yeah. We talked about this earlier, but he literally is like, whoa, she's really beautiful, I'm going to kiss her. And Granny Wendy's just kind of like, all right. Whatever.
He like pulls out the thimble and she's just like, no, you can't do that. You can't fuck with this poor girl's emotions like you did with me for 60 years. And he's like, no, like a real kiss. And I imagine that Wendy, Maggie Smith, whatever, had to be so mad at that point. It's just like,
I waited for you for 50 fucking years, you twat, and now you're going to bang my granddaughter? This is awful.
But
that's really fucked up.
But he remembers having, you know,
the movie's way darker.
It's pretty dark.
Wow.
He remembers, you know, banging Moira and having a kid, and that's his happy thought. And then we're cut back to Peter in Neverland, and he's actually flying. He's floating. And that's it. He remembers that his children are his happy thought, kind of rounding the whole movie back into itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then he can fly again. As soon as he leaves that tree, he's wearing tights and a green outfit. So he's flying around.
Boys don't fly, they don't have to wear the tights.
That's true.
Pirates don't fly, they don't wear tights. Well, I mean, they do, but they're not green ones.
But he gets back to, after flying around, remembering, he gets his, do you remember the movie Father's Day with Billy Crystal?
Yes.
And he talks about the whirl, the hair, that's his hairdo in this movie, it's like that windswept.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? is a curl, that's a whirl?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sorry, tangent. He goes back to the Lost Boys, he goes back to Rufio, he gets his sword back, he stakes his claim as being leader of the Lost Boys once again, and that's it, he's Peter Pan again. It took 2 days,
the end of 2 days, he's ready to go.
But he remembers that a crow, and that's
all
it.
All it took was a head injury and remembering he loves his kids.
But, so that's it, he's Peter Pan again, and then we have a scene later that night, which is, again, where Tinkerbell gets real fucking creepy.
Where she makes herself big.
The only time she's ever made a wish for herself.
But before that, she's sitting there staring at his credit card and his license. They're in her, like, house.
Yeah,
she's
her little
So she's sitting in her cuckoo clock house, staring at a photo of him until he shows up. And she makes the wish, and she becomes big, and they kiss, because she's always wanted to do it. It's the only wish she's ever wanted. And then he calls her Moira, and remembers that, oh, I'm here for a reason, because he's already forgotten.
Oh, because he's so wrapped up in being a kid again.
Yeah, he, like, immediately starts talking to Tink like he's a kid, you know? Yes. He's just like, are you sick? We'll get a thermometer. That's what made the Windy Lady better.
Yeah.
It's, like, referring to her as Windy Lady instead of, like...
But she confesses her love for him, which, again, you know, the whole reason he's here is because she's gotten into cahoots with Hook and Smee, which...
I love the word cahoots. I don't think it's used enough in modern conversation.
And then, you know, he remembers his kids and they prepare for war the next, and then we're at war. We're on the third day and the Lost Boys are all preparing.
Kind of fucked up because, all right, now we have the fully realized Pan, who's the best of both worlds. He can fly, he can crow, he can fight, but he also remembers what it is to be an adult and that he has kids and shit, and he still does not give a fuck. He's going to risk the life of every single Lost Boy that there is, trading the lives of a bunch of innocents for his children. Still, I don't know, still seems kind of dark for Peter Pan to me.
Well, even so, they talked about, like, Hook said earlier, he's like, I've been killing Lost Boys for years. Like,
yeah.
His whole life is killing children.
Children all the time. That's why I like this character so much.
So, I like the costume design. I think they probably spent way too much time and money on it, but I really liked it. Like, all the Lost Boys costumes. Even though the kid that runs through the spider web, not good armor. Not going to help a lot against swords. But looks cool.
Yeah.
And then we're back on the pirate ship, and Hook is trying to pierce Jack's ear with his hook, which would fuck up his ear so bad.
Suck so much.
But it's interrupted by Peter cutting his shape out of the sails. But, you know, Peter's flying, and he shows up at the ship, and he's basically like, here, I'm here, old man. Like, let's figure this out. Let's settle this deal. And he sees his son dressed as a mini Hook, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Then there's the fight scene. I mean, do you like the fight scene?
It's,
is it way too? I don't know what it.
It's so kitschy now. It's so corny.
It's a bunch of like
fight scene.
It's like Ernest style gadgets that they had.
Yeah, like the weird chicken. Had like a chicken gun. one kid is wearing a thing that kind of resembles like a wicker version of the power loader that Ripley uses to throw the alien queen out of the airlock,
right?
But it just shoots eggs. And like, this is murdering pirates for some reason. Apparently pirates are allergic to eggs.
Yeah, pirates are there with like swords and guns ready to
getting
fucking
wrecked
kill
by like gumballs and fucking boys. Chicken guns and shit.
You know what? They all did have guns and cannons,
yeah,
and they never used them.
No, why? Do they have consciences? They're pirates? I don't think so. Like, I'm very, very confused at why this ended the way it did. Like,
they really didn't follow any of the rules of combat. That were, even for the time of pirates.
They deserve
you know?
To lose.
You fire one volley before you charge in. If they had fired that first volley, all of the children would be dead and the war's over.
Easy.
Because wicker armor is not going to stop bullets.
Do not think it's bulletproof.
No.
I don't know what there is to say about this fight scene, but... You know, eventually, Peter goes to fight Hook, but then goes to rescue his kids instead because he hears Maggie screaming
in the
distance.
And Rufio steps in, like, right. Yeah, I'm going to take out the Hook because I'm the shit. And the sword duels between Dustin Hoffman and Rufio and Dustin Hoffman and Peter actually aren't that bad. They're not great sword fights, but they're not terrible.
I don't think they're terrible either. They're very, not coordinated. What am I thinking?
Choreographed.
They're very
Errol Flynn, like that early Robin Hood style choreographed.
But that was one of the things they ripped apart in those reviews that I mentioned. Like, the critics' reviews were like, none of the sword fighting was believable. And it's just like, well, which movie has... Most movies have really choreographed sword fights. So, I don't know. But Rufio gets killed by Hook.
Yeah.
Because he's not as good.
Yep. It's a shame.
Nah, I think Hook really liked killing him, and I think you would have...
Well, yeah,
I feel like you would support that.
Really did.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but Rufio had that great, you know...
Haircut.
Uh-huh. Honestly, really loved Rufio when I was
a
kid.
And the cool, like, bone armor.
Now Rufio is just kind of like... I look at him, and I'm just like, no.
Kind of a dick?
Kind of a dick.
Yeah, he's definitely a dick. He had, what did Peter say? He's got Pan envy or something?
Yeah, suffering from Peter Pan envy.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, I mean, like, it's when I was a kid, I was like, no, not Rufio, he was awesome, and now I'm just kind of like, good, Rufio's dead.
So
and Hook got to do it.
So Peter sees this happen, and he gets upset, understandably, and his decision is to not fight Hook then. He was just going to leave him to let him stew in Neverland, which doesn't make any sense at all. So then Hook calls him out. He's just like, if you fucking walk away, I'm just going to keep doing this for your children and their children.
Children and your... Yeah.
And he's just like, if you don't fight me now, I'm just going to do this forever. So...
And so Peter's like, fine, I guess.
And they fight, and he almost loses, but eventually... I mean, Peter wins.
Back or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he gets...
Our energy has been sucked out of that.
I'm so over this movie at this point.
And dude, I've been up since 5.
So they're like... I'm very tired.
I like this movie a lot still, but...
There are like 3 different fake endings to this fight. This is the fight that never ends. He's just like, I'm just going to walk away. I'll follow you forever. Okay, we'll fight. Okay, you're down. I'm going to help you up. I'm going to like slash your arm with my hook. Like... Yeah. You know?
Well, you're skipping over the part where he knocks his wig off, and he's like, give me my dignity.
You took my hand, at least give me some dignity. Give me my dignity. Yeah.
So he gives him his wig back, and then,
helps him up, and that's when Hook slashes his arm.
And then he gets eaten by the crocodile.
And that's it.
Which burps, for some reason.
So I guess it's been
When he's down on the ground and waiting for Peter to kill him, that's when Peter tries to walk away again, and then he charges Peter, and he runs into the crocodile, and it falls down. But this is the part, whenever I piss my sister off... Or I'm pissed off at my sister, whatever the case is. This will never fail to make me laugh, and she uses it all the time. She says, he's just a mean old man without a mommy.
So good.
And I crack up every time. So, like, whenever I piss her off, she's like, you're just a mean old man without a mommy. And I just fucking lose it every time.
Fucking bleak.
Yeah. Like, you know, it is fucking bleak.
You know, it's just like... Who taught you that that's an okay thing to say? It's just like, I understand that it's coming from a place of empathy,
but it still sounds like
kind of shitty.
Yeah, it sounds like you're being like, fuck him, he's an orphan. Just leave.
You know who else is an orphan? Your father.
No,
but I mean, and then it's
and
over.
Liza.
Yeah, everybody goes back. And the kids, instead of just being like, oh, we should tell our grieving, like, terrified mother where we've been... We're going to hide in bed. We're going to pretend to still be gone.
Yeah.
And so it's just kind of like...
Yeah. So, I mean, Peter comes back eventually after he gives his sword. He gives his sword to Thudbutt.
Yeah, actually, they didn't tell any of the kids. I read this. They didn't tell any of the kids who the sword was going to go to. Only Spielberg and Williams knew who they were going to give it to. So their reactions are all, like, pretty real.
Legitimate, yeah.
They're all like, dude, do I get to get the sword at the end of the movie? No, because the Thudbutt. Thudbutt is now leading the Lost Boys for the rest of time.
And,
Thud with two Ds. Butt.
That was good.
Also, in the food fight scene, there's a big block of cheese that has the name Thudbutt imprinted in it.
Oh, really? I didn't.
Nope.
Anyway, Peter goes back to the real world. He wakes up in the snow. He finds his cell phone still ringing, and
that thing would have been destroyed. Early 90s cell phone in like fucking foot deep snow for 12 hours.
Nah, man, those things were way tougher than
than iPhones.
I drop my iPhone the wrong way and it shatters everywhere. I've definitely thrown my mom's like old bricks.
Also, like one of those Nokias that you can microwave and it would still be fine.
Yeah,
could you actually microwave those?
I think you could,
probably.
Yeah. Damn. Anyway, movie's over. I mean, he goes back to his kids, he realizes he's a bad dad, throws away his cell phone, everyone lives happily ever
Toodle
after.
Toodle gets his marbles back, and then he flies off to Neverland.
Yeah, and then the worst end credit scene ever, where there's a little dot floating in...
It's just, like, turning
it turns into,
down,
like, paper.
Like, it's so bad. It's like, that's the note you want to end on?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I can see why you're not happy with this movie.
I mean... Overall, I did really enjoy this.
It's still
the movie.
A fun movie to watch.
It's definitely a classic, and it's definitely a movie I would watch again, and if I were ever to have children, I'd want them to have seen it, because I remember... Hook is a special memory for me. I remember watching it. I remember the first time I saw it, and, you know, I still love this movie, but as an adult, I can look at it and say, you could cut out easily 30 to 40 minutes of it and get it down to a much tighter, much better movie. Cut out anything with Julia Roberts, because she does nothing to forward the story other than be the bad guy. And even then, you can just get, like, all of her scenes she's terrible in.
Yeah.
Like, you can
put... Yeah, she doesn't act well in this movie.
No, she's terrible in every scene.
Every delivery, every, like, subtle nuance that Tink is supposed to have is just kind of like...
But she's a good actress, and Spielberg's a good director, so I can only assume that, like, the direction was be a fairy. Like, be a bubbly and be... But, like... It fucking failed. It didn't work out well
just
at all.
So flat.
Yeah.
But overall, like I said, overall, I really like this movie. But like you said, there were scenes that could have, like, large scenes that could have been cut.
Chunks of the movie. Most of the Lost Boys stuff could have just been more time with Hook and Shmee. I kind of just wanted the whole movie to be Hook and Shmee.
In that one room, I would have taken
it. Where he's like has like his like you know little playset, like right. The pirate ship in the Lost Boys Island.
So like if I mean we don't give ratings on this show, but like if I thought this movie was a 5 when it came out and when I was like how old, 7 years right. old, yeah, 5 out of 5,
yeah.
I'd probably give this like a
3.5.
3.5.
Yeah. I still love this movie. It's one of those movies I'm always gonna love, despite the fact I can look at it objectively and be like this is an okay movie. In terms of, like, reviewing a film, but I'm always going to love it. So it's hard for me to say. I still think it stands the test of time, but I think that you can do it without 40 minutes of this movie.
I think it's slightly better than average. I would give it, like, a 2.5. Like, maybe 2 and 3/4.
I think we're all in the same boat, roughly.
Yeah, we're, like, half a point apart.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, that was Hook from 1991. So, did you...
I've got one.
You picked a movie. I'm excited.
As
Are
much
we gonna play a game? I was going to play a game.
I mean, this got a 30. Hook got a 30% on Rotten Tomatoes. I didn't check the Rotten Tomatoes on this movie, but it is universally maligned. People hate this movie.
Okay.
Despite its widely successful cross promotional success.
Okay.
I think that you couldn't go anywhere in 1998 without hearing about this movie or seeing it. It was like the blockbuster hit of the summer, and everyone fucking hated it.
You're talking about Armageddon, are you?
No, I'm not talking about Armageddon.
People love that movie.
People love Armageddon.
I hate Armageddon.
Well, I hate Armageddon too, but people love it.
Yeah.
1998, summer blockbuster, cross-promotional.
It's delves into realms of science. Man's arrogance, destruction of New York.
What the hell was destroyed in New York in 1998?
I'm pretty sure it was New York. Anyway, it's Godzilla 1998.
Oh, I'm so excited.
This is a terrible movie. This is a terrible movie.
The worm guy.
Yeah, I'm really convinced that I'm just going to need to go out and like get a ton of gorditas and just like post up and watch this.
Oh, man.
Next time.
Was it 99?
I think
it was 98.
Is that the one where, like, first of all, I know Matthew Broderick's in it. Like, what the fuck is Matthew Broderick in my Godzilla movie? Isn't that the one where, like, Godzilla, like, shits baby raptor things in the subway?
Yep. Okay. In Madison Square Garden.
Wait.
I love a good bad monster movie.
Dude, it's pretty fantastic, and it's so bad. I remember being a kid and thinking, like, this is not good.
I never owned this movie, but I had the soundtrack, and that P. Diddy song...
Soundtrack was dope.
That was
soundtrack was straight fire.
Cashmere by Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a badass
Jimmy song. Page played on the...
Oh, did he
really? I think it was Puff Daddy at the time, but...
Yeah, well, yeah.
Whatever. But also, I think the Wallflowers were on that soundtrack, too.
God. But, I remember being, like, 9 and seeing this in theaters and being, like, this was not a good movie.
Yeah.
That was the first movie I ever went, like, physically went to when it was in theaters and thought I did not enjoy that experience.
Yeah.
So this will be special. Also, I had a point I was going to make and I forget what it was. Yep, I got nothing.
All right.
Lou, what do you have? Do you have it up over there? What's the IMDb score?
IMDb is 5.3 out of 10.
That's way generous.
I'm going to pull up Rotten Tomatoes real quick.
It's got to be brutally bad. It's a bad movie.
Maybe we're misremembering it.
No, it's maybe. Bad. Riff Tracks did it, dude.
16%.
Sitting at a solid 16.
Does that make it the lowest thing that we've ever watched?
I think so.
Well, I don't know what Rotten Tomatoes scores for Three Ninjas or Surf Ninjas were.
I think they were like the 20s.
What did we like more? We liked Surf Ninjas more, right?
But Three Ninjas had the better
despite
reviews.
The, you know, graphic.
29.
Really? 29 on Surf Ninjas. So this comes in at a solid half of Surf Ninjas. It's half as good.
Awesome.
Which, honestly, love it. So,
have you guys ever seen the original Godzilla? The original Japanese Godzilla? Well, Gojira.
Yeah, yeah, I have a whole bunch of Godzilla
that's
movies over there.
Like a serious movie. That's seriously good.
Yeah, dude, I think I talked about this when we did Ernest, where I used to love Godzilla as a kid.
I still love Godzilla.
My dad gets up for work really, really early. He goes to work at like 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. and he always has. So when I was a kid, TNT used to have Monster Vision, and they beam monster movies all night long. So my dad would get up for work at midnight or 12:30 or whatever, and just put a tape recording Monster Vision, let it run till the morning. So when I'd wake up for school, like I don't know 6:37, mm-hmm. I would watch monster movies before school and after school. I did it all the time. So I, as a kid, had like a ton of Godzilla movies saved, and I'm assuming we'll talk about it when we record. But did you guys all see Godzilla? The recent Godzilla,
the recent one that came out last summer.
No, I did not see that one.
It was actually pretty alright.
Was it?
I didn't hate it.
I enjoyed it a lot, but there's a solid 10 minutes tops of monster fighting in a 2-hour movie. I could have
90%.
I needed to be 90%. And honestly though, the scenes were fucking great.
They were so good.
But they needed a lot more of it. Less human stuff, more monster stuff. Because what they did was amazing.
Okay. I love giant monster movies. I love any kind of monster movie, really.
Including like that they're too. Called kaiju movies.
See, someone's seen Pacific Rim, huh?
They're pretty funny.
Awesome. Well, I mean, I guess next time we'll be discussing 1998's Godzilla, and I am stoked.
Matthew Broderick and Godzilla.
And Hank Azaria.
Hank Azaria's in that. Holy shit, I forgot.
Yeah, he's the cameraman. Oh, anyway. Thanks, guys, for listening to us fade out talking about Hook, and we'll see you next time.
Come on, Sudies.
Turn back, Peter. Dial-Up Movies is part of the NeoZaz Podcast Network. Head over to neozaz.com for other great podcasts such as Star Wars and Character, The Greaties, The Great 80s Movie Debate, and Pass the Popcorn. You can find Dial-Up Movies and every podcast from NeoZaz on iTunes, where you can rate, review, and subscribe. Also, please check out our Facebook and Twitter pages. You can find us on both sites as Dial Up Movies.